It's game time, driven by Briggs Auto Lane and BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
I am John Kurtz, joined by Tyler Dreiling and Mitch Fortner. I'm not sure different. About that. Maybe it's just because it's different, and maybe we can put it to an official vote later in the show, because you did say last week we'd test out the new music and see how it goes.
Just bring in, Mitch, bring in some like rock band instruments. Let's get something hooked up, because that's what I'm in the mood to do right now, play some rock band.
Honestly, in my opinion, this song should probably, instead of being our Friday intro, maybe just the national anthem of America.
Boy.
This just gets me pumped up every time I hear it.
Well, we're off to a great start here today, boys. We'll play the match game at 5:25. Cole Maybeck is going to join the show next segment at about 4:25, talking Isaiah Maurice being kicked off the team. That's what we'll talk about here in the open and plenty throughout the show. I've got some thoughts. You can't be serious at 550 as well today. You can call the show 537-1350, toll-free 866-776-1350. You can also tweet us at the Game KMAN if you have questions or comments. You know, another thing I will say about the music, the new Friday music, this whole glorious thing, it doesn't really fit the mood of what we're about to talk about here.
Well, let's just talk about the Royals first.
Can't do that, my friend. It's not the hot topic today. It's not topic A. All right, can I have the guitars out? Yeah, thank you.
I was enjoying it, John.
Well, hey, it's an okay song. I'm just not sure that it works in that context. I mean, it's fine. Like it's fine. All right, we'll talk about it at 4:50. Okay, whether or not we're going to continue to roll with that. All right, yesterday we found out it was literally right about the time I left. We got the release that Isaiah Maurice has been dismissed from the program, violation of team rules. Basically, just a statement from Bruce Weber that did not tell us much of anything, just right along the same lines of the violation of team rules. There are standards of conduct required to be a member of our program, and there are consequences when those standards aren't met. Isaiah did not meet his responsibilities, and unfortunately, this is the result. Yes, it is unfortunate because, one, Isaiah Maurice at the end of last season had shown us some promise. He had worked through a suspension last year, which I think is obviously something that comes back to the top of your mind when he gets dismissed from the program. Really seemed like that suspension set him back, and they were happy to have him going. Bruce Weber had gone out of his way not once but twice when talking to us here on this show about the improvement that Isaiah Maurice had made. He was very excited about the trip that he went on, that Athletes in Action tour, and in fact, I remembered this and went back and listened yesterday to the interview that we did with Bruce Weber 2 weeks ago yesterday. It was on June 1st. We had Bruce Weber on the show, and as we were just trying to leave the interview, be done with it, he actually stopped and made sure to interject some thoughts here about Isaiah Maurice, which would tell you that they were very excited about where he was headed. Appreciate the time for joining us, as always,
no
Bruce.
Problem.
We'll talk to you soon.
No problem. Yeah, Isaiah, I don't know if Isaiah's been in Czechoslovakia, and he's been in Poland. They got three more games this weekend, so hopefully that's been a good experience. I checked with them today, and so we might have a couple other guys go later in August. So.
That tells you to me that Bruce Weber was wanting to make sure that he pushed PR-wise for this program. Hey, we're going to be in good hands. Isaiah Maurice has made improvements. We need big guys to develop down low. Help Dean Wade out, and Isaiah Maurice looks to be that guy. So I can imagine this is a very big blow for Bruce Weber and the program. And we could get into, if we wanted to, all the ins and outs of, like, I mean, is this more on him? Can you blame Bruce Weber if this happens? And, like, that's fine, I guess, if people want to have that conversation. But here's the bottom line. 12 players have left in 6 years of Bruce Weber now. We've just gone through this so many times, and every time it seems like the program begins to pick up some momentum, you have a setback, and it just ultimately feels like this program is spinning its tires. You have to have some big guys develop down low, and if you're going to be K-State and not have Michael Beasley and Bill Walker rolling into town, you're going to have to develop guys over 2, 3, 4 years, K-State, big man-wise, outside of DJ Johnson, just has not been able to do that at all. And at a certain point, you have to stop just individualizing each one of these cases and complaining back and forth. All right, whose fault is this one? Whose fault is this one? At some point, you have to keep kids around, and you have to develop them if the program's going to go where we all want it to go. And this is just another one of those paper cuts in a long line of them that have happened over the last 6 years.
It's become very clear, regardless of where you have stood on Bruce Weber, and I know that it's such a polarizing topic for K-State fans. Ironically, I think in a negative way, you're starting to see more unification on the issue now, but you think back to where the fan base was at 3 years ago, and you had the vocal minority against the people that were still supporting Bruce Weber. And regardless of which camp you were in at that time or 2 years ago or last year or right now, I think that you have to look at this objectively and say that the two biggest weaknesses that Bruce Weber has as a head coach or has had at K-State are, one, his ability to retain players, and two, his ability to develop them. And the combination of those two things is the real problem here, because you can maybe get away with having a weakness being one of those two, but when you combine them, it basically makes it impossible for your program to take a step forward on an annual basis. And that's what K-State was counting on this year, using the NCAA tournament appearance to go ahead and leapfrog to, you know, maybe a second weekend type of team next year. That's what they needed. But the combination of these things here just shows you that the program at this point is not capable of doing that.
It's a vicious cycle that you get into when you're talking about those two things that you mentioned. And I agree with you, by the way, that those are the two biggest downfalls of Bruce Weber: maintaining players and developing players. Clearly, there have been guys that have stuck around and developed very nicely. Look no further than all this chat about Wesley Iwundu right now being an NBA draft pick. Look no further than DJ Johnson, to me, being the most valuable player on the team really the last 2 years. I said that throughout all of last season, but probably the last 2 years, based on what he turned into down low and the lack of other bigs that they have. But that's been the issue. Not enough players have stuck it out through the course of 3 or 4 years here in this program to turn it into what you want it to be. Now, I know that there are a number of transfers right now in college basketball, and it is just a fact of life if you're going to be a college basketball coach. But here at K-State, if you're going to make it work, you have to get some of these key guys to stick around, and enough of them to stick around. And we've just seen so much of it since Bruce Weber has been here. At a certain point, you know, you can sit there and blame Isaiah Maurice and say, well, he didn't have his head screwed on straight, and that may well be true. I mean, I don't have any inside information right now about what exactly happened here, but I just think it's irrelevant, because it goes back to some of the conversation about gutting the program a few years ago and letting Bruce Weber come back after the five players left. It's like, you have to take responsibility for it at a certain point. You can't just explain it away and say, these guys were bad apples, they're all gone. When this has happened again and again, one, recruit guys who won't be an issue. Recruit guys who you know will not be an issue here. You have the ultimate say. That always got me with Marcus Foster. This program recruited him and opened its doors to him coming in here. So you have to be a judge of that. That is a part of being a major college basketball coach. I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying I would be able to do it, but you have to be able to do it. And if you are going to get guys that are questionable and you know that you're going to have to work with and really stay on top of to get them to develop and stay here, you know, I understand taking some chances, but then you've got to be the guy that can contain them personality-wise, motivate them, and get them going. It's got to be one of those two. We are past the point of just writing this off as, all right, this was a bad apple, this kid, you know, he's setting the program back, but that's not the coach's fault. We can cut him some slack here. I don't want to come across sounding, you know, too mean really here, but I would just close by saying this can't alter your expectations for next season. We are well beyond that point of the Bruce Weber era here at K-State, and I don't think I'm saying anything different than the majority of the fan base thinks right now.
I'm with you on that. I mean, it's not going to be a situation next year where you can get picked to finish eighth or ninth and you can finish sixth or seventh and feel good about that. I mean, you just, at a certain point, it's not the eighth or ninth portion of that sentence that matters. It's the sixth or seventh that matters. And you can talk about it as long as you want. Well, where would this program be if Malik Harris had stayed and developed, if Trey Harris had stayed and developed, Dante Williams, Nigel Johnson, Javon Thomas, the list goes on and on and on.
I love Javon, I'm not sure that that would have.
Yes, but look, I mean, would it be in a better place with him than without him? I mean, probably. You know, you're looking at a guy, we're going to get way too far down that road. But the list is just too long to ignore and to individualize it by each individual case. There are definitely some guys that did some things that were worthy of getting thrown off the team, and there's no doubt about that, but you can't look at it that way anymore. At this point, it's just the magnitude of the list, and that's what has to be the headline here.
This is a pattern, and there's no denying that it's a pattern. And I would say that the fact that we are having the reaction we are, and most people are, to losing Isaiah Maurice, a guy who scored less than 5 points a game last year, just really wasn't a factor outside of three or four games, it is sending everybody into a negative downward spiral. It's being treated like a very big deal. And that's because of the situation that they are in with the big men, because there just haven't been guys that have stuck around and developed here. They've had some bad injury luck, but they've also had guys like Dante Williams leave and now Isaiah Maurice. And the fact that Maurice leaving is such a big blow, feels like such a big blow, just goes back to the bigger picture problem here, that they have not been able to develop enough in terms of big guys. They've had issues with guards too, but it's really the bigs that are the centerpiece of all this for Bruce Weber and company. So we'll talk much more about it throughout the show. Focus in on what exactly has happened with the big men and where they're going to go from here next year at 5:10. But coming up, bring Cole Manbeck on, part of the PowerCat Game Day crew, PowerCat Game Day blogger. We'll see how much he thinks Maurice leaving changes the ceiling of this team. You're listening to The Game. Back here on The Game, John Kurtz, Tyler Dreiling, and Mitch Fortner with you. We'll play the match game at 5:25. Talk with Cole Manbeck coming up here in just a moment. Talk some K-State basketball. Unfortunately, he's not anticipating talking K-State hoops here on June 16th, but the news breaking late yesterday about Isaiah Maurice dismissed from the team. So that becomes a topic of discussion here today. We'll chat with Cole in just a moment. We're not going to be able to do this because Mitch has to get Cole on the phone here, but he's already retweeted two facts, apparently, so I hope everybody else enjoyed that opening segment, but it sounds like Mitch was not all that enthralled by it.
Let's see. NASA accidentally taped over the moon landing. There is no known original recordings of the event.
What? Really?
That's what it says. Listen to me.
I don't trust... I just sounded like I was more interested in that than what we're actually talking about today.
I think that we were more interesting than the other one, though. His other one is, a father once hired a bunch of assassins to kill his son's online World of Warcraft character because he was spending too much time on it.
That one's dumb. I like that one.
No, that one's dumb.
I think that one's pretty good.
Just so everybody knows, before I actually retweet these, I fact check them. Just to make sure they're real.
It goes through an extensive vetting process, huh? Can we go ahead and just get the sounder, like, retroactively?
Since Mitch is bored with the show, it's time for his WTF Fact of the Day.
And I'm like, WTF is going on around here?
All right, there it is. Like that. Just wanted to make sure that we get that in. Let's welcome in Cole Manbeck, the smoothest of transitions here, to talk some K-State basketball. Before we do that, Cole, we were just texting back and forth about this. I feel for you this weekend. I'm sorry that I cannot go hang out with you at the lake. You had the opportunity to have like a boys weekend, and nobody's coming through for you, man. That's pretty rough. I'm sorry.
Tyler, are you in?
Well, I was just...
He's sitting here looking at me like, yeah.
Where was my invitation?
So, yeah, it's... I'm just sitting here. It's Father's Day weekend, and I got the clearance to just go out on the lake all alone. And obviously, it's more fun to have some people out on the water. But I don't think anyone will pity with me too much being at the lake this weekend in this heat. So I don't think I'll get too much sympathy.
Wait, what lake?
Council Grove.
Oh yeah, I'm in.
All right.
I don't have anything going on.
What else is on the Father's Day docket? This is Father's Day number one, right?
It is. It feels a little strange. You know, a few weeks ago, I was stressing out about getting everything ready for Vanessa for Mother's Day and having to really blow it out for that first Mother's Day. And then I you know, it feels a little strange to think that I'm actually a father now and have my first Father's Day coming up. So I think the biggest Father's Day gift to me is just kind of a weekend free here where I don't have to do much much duties with the baby. So I think that's probably the biggest gift for my wife.
That honestly, from the outside looking in, I would imagine that that is a very incredible gift here on Father's Day as a young father. Cole Manbeck talking with us here on the game. What was your initial reaction to hearing yesterday about Isaiah Maurice being dismissed?
Well, very surprised, just because we'd heard such positive things, you know, coming out of the off-season work that he'd put in and then going overseas with the athletes in action and the way that he stepped up his play at the end of the year. And you could tell he seemed on the bench and in the games much more emotionally invested last year at the end of the season. The last few games, once he started playing more, you could kind of see more emotion come out from him during games. And, you know, I thought by then he'd learned his lesson from the mistakes made earlier in the season that led to his three-game suspension, and that he had turned a corner and kind of saw the potential that, you know, he could have on this basketball team now and going forward. So surprised to see that mistakes were made again, and unfortunately he's been dismissed from the program, and I certainly think it hurts. And, you know, really my first reaction is I just can't see this team getting to the NCAA tournament now without Isaiah Maurice. And as a result, I mean, Bruce Weber's job security is really on thin ice.
Yeah, Cole, that's something I wanted to ask you about, just the difference in ceiling for this team with and without Isaiah Maurice. I still think that they have a top four, you know, list of guys in Dean Wade, Kamau Stokes, Barry Brown, Xavier Sneed, that is at least average or above average in the Big 12. But not having that fifth guy, you think is enough to keep this team from the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think just with the issues of experience and depth on the inside, a lot of it will depend on, you know, is the Levi Stockard, Nigel Shad, and Hawaiian coming in from junior college, are they all projects, or are a couple of them going to be able to step in, at least give you serviceable minutes? And then James Love, how raw is he? You know, he's kind of a project. When he came in, he wasn't really able to practice much last year due to the broken foot. So, you know, he's essentially starting new from scratch with K-State. And so you've got four inexperienced big men at the D1 level, and then one guy in Dean Wade who is your most experienced big man, but we all know Dean Wade, you know, does a lot of his scoring on the outside, actually, and isn't really that big physical grinder in the paint like a DJ Johnson type. And so, yeah, that's the biggest concern. I just don't see them having enough post-depth, and I shouldn't say depth, I should say quality post-depth with experience to really be able to handle the Big 12 schedule. And so that's why I struggle to see this team make an NCAA tournament. Keep in mind, you know, and I'm not saying Joe Lunardi is everything, but he was already projecting K-State as, I believe, only one of two Big 12 teams in the tournament next year, and that was with Isaiah Maurice. Now you take him out of the mix, and, you know, there's just not much depth there in the post.
Cole Manbeck talking with us here on the game. And I think this just underscores what's been the biggest downfall of the Bruce Weber era here at K-State, just the lack of guys that have stuck it out through 3 or 4 years to develop. We look at the finished products of Wesley Owundu and DJ Johnson, and you do have to give them credit. Those guys developed pretty well. Wes a little bit later, I think, than everybody would have hoped. But by the end of it, you say, hey, they actually did a pretty good job there. But the problem is, with 12 players leaving since Bruce Weber has taken over, there just haven't been enough of those guys. I mean, doesn't this just feel like another one bites the dust? It just feels like the beat goes on here.
Yeah, exactly, John. I mean, you really felt like they've never really been able to fulfill a complete 13 scholarship roster during his time here, and that they're constantly battling having guys leave the program or playing with, you know, 10 scholarship players or just a couple scholarship players that are uninjured in the post and lacking size. I mean, it just really underscores that issue. And, you know, I haven't really gone back and done a detailed analysis, and, you know, this is going into Bruce Weber's sixth season, but I am interested to look at how many high school guys that he recruited to sign with K-State actually have finished it out in their 4 years. Granted, he is just in his sixth year, so there's only a couple years opportunity for guys to, you know, graduate in that senior year. But off the top of my head, only guys I'm really thinking of are Owundu and DJ Johnson. And, you know, transfers happen nowadays. They happen a lot. But 12 in that time frame, 12 or 13, it's just too many to be able to really fulfill and sustain this program at the level that you want. And especially when you lose impactful transfers like a Marcus Foster and Isaiah Maurice. Look, this is a guy that averaged 3 points and 2 rebounds per game last year. But and so maybe that hints to, you know, some of the holes in the roster. This is such a big loss. But it is a guy that I felt like had a skill set that could really be a quality player with time. I think he showed he had really good hands near the end of last year and some really good touch around the paint and skill set to score the basketball, which I think this team sorely needs. He has a back-to-the-basket type of game as well as a face-up game. And so, you know, it stings. And as a result, you know, I just don't see K-State making the tournament. And, you know, I'd be surprised if they don't, that Bruce Weber's back for a seventh year.
Cole Manbeck, again, talking with, excuse me. Here is some of the collateral damage, some of the fallout from this that really concerns me. I think this puts a lot more pressure on Dean Wade to not only be a guy who scores, but he's going to really have to rebound the basketball. He's the leading returning rebounder, and this takes away, you know, some of the size that you would have had inside. And we know that Dean Wade has been a guy that at times has not handled pressure all that well necessarily. How concerning is it to you that he may now have more put on his back?
Well, I think that's certainly a factor. And then I think the other factor is Dean Wade's a guy that, you know, battled picking up a couple early fouls in games, some cheap fouls that put him on the bench. And now, you know, this is a guy that sometimes isn't overly aggressive, that really has to be even less aggressive now, because if he gets in foul trouble, K-State does not have a single experienced post player to turn to. So that's a big factor. And then, you know, the other factor is you don't have a true five man, a true center on your roster now that you know has any experience. And so no matter what, you really can't play a five with any experience. So you're either going to be going small, where K-State has essentially a four-guard, small-forward type lineup with one big man, and that being Dean Wade, and they could get killed on the boards that way. So if you match up with a team with a lot of size, K-State's in trouble. And so that's really the issues that fall in line here. And then you're right, John. I mean, I think it puts a ton of pressure on Dean Wade to be a guy that can score, defend, rebound, do it all. And he is a guy that, you know, in the first 2 years has kind of faded away when the pressure hit. So it's a concerning factor and something to think about as well.
Well, Cole, appreciate you spending some time with us here on Friday, somewhat impromptu with this news coming down the pipe yesterday. But hope you still enjoy your Father's Day weekend. I am sorry that I can't make it.
Well, you enjoy moving in this heat city with your dad, and try not to sweat out too much. It'll be quite the workout. You might want to hydrate up tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to have to start thinking about that. Chug some Gatorade before I get down there.
Don't have too much fun tonight. I would recommend staying out of Aggieville if you got to move in this heat.
That is 100% going to not happen. I will not be in – you will not find me there tonight. I can guarantee that. Cole, appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
We'll play the match game at 5:25 in hour two of the show. More on Bruce Weber and the bad luck with big men at 5:10 and what it means for next year. When we come back, though, some proof from yesterday's Royals game that tells you all you need to know about how well things are rolling right now for the boys in blue. This is the game. We'll get to some Royals here in just a moment. They are rolling. Match game at 5:25 in hour two. More on the situation with men's basketball, Isaiah Maurice leaving the team at 5:10. Here's a quick college basketball point for you, because I'm seeing breaking news right now that the Philadelphia 76ers supposedly are in talks about taking Boston's number one overall pick. And, you know, I really don't care very much about the NBA draft outside of if Wesley Iwundu gets drafted or not. But they're thinking about going to get Markel Fultz, who's the Washington kid. I have never seen him play. And to me, that's a commentary on the state of college basketball. I have never seen the number one pick play basketball. On TV, in person, whatever, anything. I did not watch a single Washington game. I don't know that I've really seen highlights of him. I think I saw him the other day on SportsCenter just like during a workout or something like that, a workout for a team. Like, college basketball just does not have any sort of national pull to me at all, outside of Big 12 hoops. Like, there's not much there.
Bringing up this topic is putting us in a dangerous situation that Mitch might retweet a third WTF fact of the day. because I don't think that he's very interested in this, and I'm not either.
Have you watched Markelle Fultz play?
I watched, like, there were a couple of Washington games that were like those 10 p.m. starts that I did watch just because, you know, I heard that there was this one great player on this team, and Lorenzo Romar, whatever his name is, was the coach there. And so I tuned into it a little bit, but, you know, I'm not analyzing him as a number one pick or anything like that. So, yeah, just weird.
Mitch, have you ever seen Markelle Fultz play?
No.
Okay. So we're all on board. We got a great working knowledge here. The guy who's probably going to go number one overall in the NBA draft. Ben Simmons, the year before, I did watch a little bit, but, like, the one game I remember watching was when they played Oklahoma. So if it doesn't involve a Big 12 team, mm-hmm. it's like turning into Major League Baseball, more or less, the way you treat it. Just you watch your team, you care about your team, maybe the teams in your division or, in this case, your conference. Not much else outside of that. That was just a revelation that really hit me there. Like, man, I used to just love college basketball and soak it all in. Not the same at all. Did you soak in the Royals game yesterday?
I did soak in the Royals
game.
Soak it all
in. Mm-hmm. Another victory. Here is how I know things are really rolling for the Royals. You know, there was all this talk last year about Matt Strom when he came on at the end of the year. Had a pretty nice season as a reliever, and then it was like, okay, is this guy going to be a starter or a reliever? It's spring training. It was like, hey, maybe he could move into being a starter. But they had gone away from that, and I had honestly forgotten somewhat about Matt Strom. Well, all of a sudden, they're on this winning streak, ripping off win after win. They just roll him out there for six innings of one-run baseball. Just like that. No problem. Matt Strom making a start. There it goes. That's how it goes right now for the Royals.
Of course, the team that could not score any runs in the month of April has scored seven runs in five straight games for the first time since 1979. That's something that I love about baseball, because you can't see something like that in any other sport. If you took, like, let's say Kansas football and the defenses that they've rolled out there, like, there's no way that Kansas is all of a sudden gonna hold, like, three straight opponents to single digits or something. It's just not gonna happen. But you can take what was truly an awful offense in the Royals at the beginning of the year. And I say that to the extent that, like, statistically, they were the worst offense in the history of the franchise through the first 5 weeks of the season. And, of course, now they're hitting home runs, like, three a night and scoring a bunch of runs. It's just it's kind of funny how baseball works like that. But, again, five in a row, and all of a sudden they kind of got a chance here.
And climbing back into it with, let me read you the starting pitchers that they have that are basically the rotation right now. I mean, I know the offense is probably front page news. That's the headline here with what they've been doing in the turnaround. But to be able to scrape by with an 0-6 Ian Kennedy, then Jake Junis, Jason Vargas, Jason Hamill, Matt Strom as the guys that are going bam, 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 bam right now in the rotation. If you would have given me a snapshot of that, and I would have seen that Ian Kennedy was 0-6, and then everybody else was Junis, Vargas, Hamill, Strom, I'd be like, oh, boy. Oh, they're in some trouble here. I don't know what happened with rotation, but they're in some trouble.
You had Eric Skoglund getting trotted out there for three starts, and they've managed to, I think, win either one or two of the three starts that he's been out there. Like, man, I don't know. I don't know how the Royals find a way to always claw back from the grave, but they've got a 7.1% chance of making the playoffs, which is an improvement of more than 5% from a week ago.
I just still, you're not going to be surprised by this at all. I have to fight what my head is saying about the names here on the roster that I'm seeing, the guys that they're throwing out there actually playing, and just does not feel like a playoff team to me. I just get this feeling like they're MacGyvering it right now. It's like this thing's held together by duct tape, paper clips, and some rubber bands, but somehow it's working. I mean, I can't totally figure it out right now.
One of the reasons for that, and there was a good article about this on Royals Review, the Sports Blog Nation site for the Royals, but basically
Sports Blog Nation, is that
sports,
a thing?
Yeah, SB Nation. That's what that means.
That's SB what Nation, that stands for?
Sports Blog, yeah. Yeah. You learn something new every day. Anyway.
Breaking news. Breaking news me.
Anyway, they pointed out today that Whit Merrifield has basically been Ben Zobrist for the Royals this season. I mean, he's got the versatility in the field. He's not a great fielder, but he's solid at second base, and he's getting on base, and he's hitting some home runs. Like, he he's basically been Ben Zobrist for this team, and they really, really have needed him to be that, and that's one of the reasons why this has been able to happen.
I really like Whit Merrifield.
Yeah.
I really like Whit Merrifield, and I really like him as the leadoff man. That's been a really nice plug for what was a gap for a good portion of the season, is the way Merrifield's playing right now. Everybody fell in love with him already last year, but the jury was still out on whether or not this guy can be a consistent everyday major league player. I think he's starting to get to that point where he is proving everybody wrong.
What did you think the SB stood for?
I have no idea. I honestly have no idea. That to me, here radio show, we're supposed to be entertaining more than informative, but that I think is like the biggest bit of information that we have broken and dropped on the show in a long time.
One more thing I want to throw out real quick about the Royals. Luckily for them, like the rest of the American League, like everybody who's been on runs is fizzling out. Everybody's just going win one, lose one. Royals are the only one going on a run right now. As a matter of fact, if the wild card standing, the Royals are 2 games out of being a wild card team.
Is that true?
That is true.
They're 3 games under 500.
That's the thing. Like the entire American League is a 500 team.
Yeah.
Yeesh. Match game at 5:25. Hopefully we can stay on topic until then, because we're not doing a great job of it here today. But we'll wrap up the hour. We got to come to a consensus on this Friday music. And if we have time, we do have some college football news to get to as well here on The Game. We're back here on The Game at 5:10. Tough luck with big men in Bruce Weber's program. We will reveal what things are going to look like down low next year. It ain't pretty, exactly, right now with Isaiah Maurice leaving the program. Match game at 5:25. Has anybody budged off their vote from last week on this new Friday song, the glorious song?
I mean, I'm up in
song.
The air.
Ooh.
The reason I like it is because the guy whose theme song this is, he is the next Triple H. He is your next
boy, did you
he's
have like a
guy.
Did you go back home and have like a town hall and now you're feeling the pressure and you're iffy, you could be swayed here? Is that what you're telling me? On the Friday music?
Well, when I was putting this together, I was kind of thinking the same thing you were. Like, this just doesn't have exactly what the original Friday music has.
Yeah, I just feel like it disrupts the rhythm.
Like, to me, though, I mean, it gets me pumped. I listen to it every Friday because it's a sweet song. Like, when Bobby Roode comes out, the whole arena is singing the song, and it's awesome. But as a wrestling fan, I'm biased.
What if you just cut it so that once the main intro part is done, it just goes straight to the glorious part where he starts belting out glorious.
You don't like the beginning piano?
I think it was just a rough transition. It just seemed like a very rough transition. You know, when you had the Triple H music, whatever that is, Lemmy, it just...
Motorhead.
Yeah, right. Which I actually like me some Motorhead, so that's a part of it. But it just goes straight into that chord. Like, you just hammer, like, that power chord, whatever it is, and it's just a perfect, like, all right, here we go, stop what you're doing and pay attention. You know the first note of the song?
Yes.
I just like how it does that. I feel like it just brings you back into it, pulls you back into everything.
I can go either way on that song, but I would like for the old Friday music to be our Monday through Thursday music. I like that more than our usual intro Monday through Thursday.
Hmm. Well, we have been talking about doing some re-imaging of the show, so I would take that into consideration. I would listen to that.
It's the way it used to be with Matt. It's the way he told me.
I don't think it was. It wasn't that. No, there was
before you came along.
Well, I mean, maybe if it was like way, way back in the day. But
yeah.
Man, I mean, I've been.
This song's been around for a while.
I mean, I've been. God, if it was more than 8 or 9 years ago. But they had a similar sounding song when I was first starting on the show, but it wasn't exactly the same. I don't know. I don't know that I could verify that either way. Do we want to hold an official vote, or do we want to talk about it? What's the plan here?
We'll discuss it after the show.
Okay. Seems like we're not getting anywhere, really, with this. Here's a quick football point. Florida gave Jim McElwain, their head coach, an extension today. So he now makes $4.5 million a year. And the reason that I bring that up is because earlier this week I was mentioning when Mike Gundy got his extension, it's like, man, Gundy makes $4.2 million. Like, Oklahoma State is really solidly committing to him. And not that Jim McElwain has been totally tearing up the world at Florida right now, but he's been pretty solid. And this is an SEC school with a lot of resources, and they are only paying their coach $300,000 more than Mike Gundy. I mean, they're basically right there in terms of what they are paying him. So the fact that Oklahoma State is as committed to Mike Gundy as Florida seems to be with Jim McElwain financially, I think that is significant. I think it tells you all you need to know about what Oklahoma State thinks about Mike Gundy and how willing they are to try and maintain this pace that they're on right now as a program.
Yeah, and in addition to the 4.2, I mean, that increases by $125,000 each year, so you get closer and closer to that 4.5. You certainly wouldn't think that Oklahoma State and Florida would be paying their coaches about the same amount, but I tend to think that the better value is actually Gundy, even though there's more money.
No doubt.
There's more money to be thrown around at Florida, but Gundy gets the job done, and like we talked about earlier this week, with Lincoln Riley, we may or may not see some sort of a falling off with Oklahoma, and that would mean that the top dog spot in the Big 12 is right there, and I think that Oklahoma State would be primed to take it.
Yeah, if you're talking about value, I mean, nothing against Jim McElwain, but Florida could find another Jim McElwain. Like, they could find another guy to go there and win 9 games a year and not score at all on offense. I mean, Mike Gundy's value in winning 9 or 10 games at Oklahoma State, just because it's a tougher job, resources not there as much as they are at Florida, yeah, his value is, I think, exponentially bigger and more important to Oklahoma State than Jim McElwain is to Florida. It reminds me of, you guys are going to love this. You know who Lil Uzi Vert is?
No.
A lot of popular songs out there right now, you have no idea?
Nope.
Okay, well, he has a line in a song where he says, "Yeah, you're cool, but I could find a better you." I feel like that's Florida with Jim McElwain. They just have $4.5 million to throw at the guy who's cool, but they could find a better one. All right, this has been really the biggest issue Bruce Weber's had in Manhattan. We'll talk about it next.
When you shop at Carpenter.